Okay, so we have the tremendous zchus to spend a few minutes on the seventh aliyah of Yisro. Of course, Yisro is a very intense parsha from beginning to end, quite a lot to talk about. And the end is about intensity. So let's talk about that for a few minutes. The seventh aliyah of Yisro begins. The Chol Ha'am. Roim es hakolos v'yesa lapidim v'yesa kol ha-shofar v'yesa ha-shein v'yara am v'yanu v'yamdu merachol. So the people all saw the thunder and the lightning and the sound of the shofar and the smoke on the mountain. And when they saw it, they shook and they moved and they ended up standing far away. So some of the language here catches your attention right away. Kol ha'am roim. Of course, that doesn't seem to fit the idea of seeing the sound of the shofar, seeing the thunder. What exactly does that mean? So here many of the Rishonim comment to the Rambam and Marne Hufim, and the Ibn Ezra and others note that it's not unusual. You could bring many other examples throughout Tanakh of words where the senses seem to not match, where it seems like we're talking about, for example, seeing a smell or the like. Ibn Ezra notes that this is to reflect the fact that all of the senses have a common source. They all go to our perception and they all end up in the same place. Rabbeinu Bachya writes here that it means in the sense of understanding, that they understood the whole message. Or he also suggests that it refers to the imagery of the fire. They saw the fire. We know also that in terms of the mixed imagery, that nowadays there's a lot of discussion about people processing learning in different ways. Some people focus on processing learning visually, others more audio focused. Some have observed that the question of whether a person has a tendency to say, "I see your point," or "I hear what you're saying," correlates to whether they're more visual learners or more audio learners. But in any event, here it seems to represent a little bit more than that. Soloveitchik noted that it was necessary for this to be a very visual experience that the whole world saw, because everyone has to understand that the Torah was being accepted by the Jewish people, and that this was their source of holiness. And the Sefer H. Tamid of Ridruk, he suggests that the visual imagery is meant to emphasize to us that we have to be able to have the whole Torah in front of us in our head, that we can see it. He quotes the story there. It's a well-known story that Chaim Volozhiner said that his brother, Zalman Volozhiner, was an unbelievable gaon. He knew the entire Torah. So they asked him, well, what's the difference between him and the Vilna Gaon then? Chaim's Rebbe was the Vilna Gaon, so if they both know the whole Torah, what's the difference? And he commented that Rav Zalman, he knew the Torah in its entirety from beginning to end. And the Vilna Gaon, he also knew it backwards. So he explains, what does that mean, with the chap of knowing it backwards? So if I were to ask you to say Ashrei, so, okay, everyone knows Ashrei by heart, we're also familiar with it. If I ask you to say Ashrei backwards, we wouldn't have such an easy time. If you have a sitter open, then maybe he can manage to say Ashrei backwards. So the Vilna Gaon, his knowledge of Torah was such that it was kilu all the time. Like the Torah is right in front of him, all the words are there, and he could just read them backwards or forwards, wouldn't be a problem. So too, he suggests that that's the imagery here, that we should all be able to see it in front of us. Rashid Kambiavner of Goldwicht noted that the whole combination here specifically of seeing and hearing says that seeing is our first level of exposure to the whole world. We just see things first and we see the whole package. And hearing is a more intellectual experience, like the next step processing, and that's what connects to our intellect in a more direct way. But also it's more selective. We choose what to hear, both in terms of we choose what to pay attention to, and we also choose how to interpret what we're hearing. The reality often shows us that people hear what they want to hear, even though there are a lot of other things being said. So he suggests that really we need a combination of both, that we need the hearing, because the hearing is what really brings the sense more fully into our intellect. But we need our hearing to be like seeing. We need it to be more objective, and not that it's something that we are imposing our own interpretation upon. And the Mechilta has a comment here you find in a lot of places, that a number of places in Chazal, that it says, "V'chol ha'am ro'im," everyone saw. So it sounds like nobody was blind. It sounds like everybody was able to see, and apparently everybody was able to hear. So as the Torah Tumah points out, and this is clear from many other sources also, that it's not that nobody had been blind and nobody had been deaf, it's that they were all healed at Har Sinai, and that everybody was restored to full health and capability. And afterwards, the Chet Egel, so then some of these issues were restored, or put back in place. But this idea that Har Sinai was a source of everyone being immediately relieved of whatever physical concerns they had, some have suggested that that's why the minhag has become to name hospitals after Mount Sinai. We frequently find in Mount Sinai Hospital, other hospitals drawing on the Sinai imagery, that maybe it has to do with the fact that Har Sinai, not only was the main base medrash of the world, but it was also apparently the most effective hospital, and it made everybody better. So it's an inspiration to the yeshivas, an inspiration to the hospitals all at once. It's quite a place. Okay, so Vayara Avianu, so they all saw and they moved around. About Turim writes over here that also is reflective of something, that the source for the idea of swaying, of moving around while we're learning, comes from this pasuk. The Zohar has imagery that a Jew, the soul of the Jew, is like a candle. So when you prompt the candle by showing it the Brit Torah, so it reacts, it flickers, and it's also this idea of moving when one is learning. The Kuzari actually notes that there's a more practical origin to this, that it used to be they didn't have enough svarim for everyone, they couldn't cheaply produce books, so they would have one big book and everyone would be looking on, and all 10 people would be around, so people in the mailer are moving around. But in any event, the Ramah actually brings this in Shulchan Aruch, that the Medaktikim, when they are reading from the Torah, they move around a little bit, and that's like the way the Torah was given. They give them beresas, people were shaking. So too, that practice has continued. Okay, very interesting idea. So the Jews are quite intimidated, as is understandable. V'yomru Moshe, daber ata imanu, v'nishma, you speak and we'll listen to you. And so we don't want to hear from God directly. We don't think we can handle this. We're afraid we're going to die. And as far as point out, there's a reference to the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos and Daf Yechesh and Beis, which says, in fact, that every word that left the Kadosh Baruch Hu's mouth, kibyachol, so when the Jews heard that, they died. They were just overcome. Yotza nishmasam each time. And then they were resuscitated. That the Tal would do that is set aside for Chiyas HaMeisim ultimately is brought into play over here, and the Jews come back after each word, and then it happens again. So it's a pretty scary experience. So they're afraid. They wonder how many times can they continue with this. So they're nervous. They don't want to keep hearing it from God himself. Hi.
So does this mean that when we're shaking. I know, like, some people shuckle and others, that they realize that, like, whatever, just like they do. But does that mean that the root of it is that we should be feeling a certain sense of fear?
So the theory, yes. The question, what that means practically, because we also have to be able to live. So we do have this idea that we're trying to evoke Har Sinai in the way the Torah is processed now. So yes, that does mean a certain type of seriousness. Tosus in the Gemara Masech Shabbos talks about the fact that the Rebbe, the Rav, would make a joke in the beginning and the end of Shir, and the Tosus discusses how do you reconcile that with this idea of Ein Rebbe Yir Rest of the Day, and I have some answers. But maybe only the Rebbe's allowed to joke, the students aren't. That's one answer. Another possibility is that it has to do with the beginning and the end and not the middle. It's a fine balance that we try to navigate. The Gemara also says that once upon a time they used to only learn standing up. Nowadays, we feel that we're too weak to be able to learn effectively while also worrying about standing up, so we allow ourselves to sit. But there is a whole theme that, yes, we do want to try to evoke a certain reverence and a certain attitude, which does reflect that we're looking to bring back the Sinaitic experience. So this idea of dying, that I wouldn't recommend that you die after every word, but apparently at Har Sinai, that did happen, and there's a whole discussion, the Chavetzal Sasharin, if you take a look at the contemporary Sefer Chavetzal Sasharin, has a whole discussion about what does that mean practically in terms of their marriages, are they still married, or everybody has to get married again. Sounds like that's not true, but what exactly are the implications of dying and coming back? It's an interesting discussion. It comes up in other settings also. There's a lot to talk about that. Okay, so the next pasuk says, "Vayomer Moshe la'am al tiro ki levavor nasos eschem v'ha elokim uvavor tia yirasu al pneichem levilti zecheto." So Moshe says to the nation, "Don't be afraid. Don't be so scared." And that already, that he's kind of countering what they're saying. They're saying, "Listen, we want you. We don't want to speak directly to God." So the Znaim Latorah Luskarov points out that the average person would be flattered at this. And people say, "Listen, you'd be the one to give us the Torah, and we're not going to be able to handle hearing it from God." But Moshe is Anav Mikol Adam, and he realizes he's not looking for the flattery. He would rather they do hear it directly from the source. So he tries to convince them, "Don't be afraid." So this idea of Lo'avor Nasos Eschem is an important line. What exactly does that mean? So what does it mean, Nasos Eschem? So it sounds like it's the word Nisoyim, like to test. So the Ramban has a comment over here where he understands it in that context, that it means that we have to know when we're giving the Torah to the Jews are receiving the Torah, and it takes place in the context of this dramatic display of thunder and lightning. Why is that important? That's important because we have to test the Jewish people to see how much they're able to appreciate something spectacular. Do they recognize that this is something that is amazing? Or are they jaded and is their attitude, been there, done that? That's not something that's so impressive. Because no matter how glorious the Torah is, and infinitely so, if the Jewish people are not able to appreciate majesty and grandeur, so then nothing's going to get through. And that's how Rav Huttner, for example, he quotes this Ramban in explaining, and the Gemara says in the Dharam, that Yerushalayim was destroyed, al-Ozvam Eskarasi, and the fact that the Jews abandoned the Torah, and we know it's not true, they didn't abandon the Torah, but he explains, based on the Gemara there, the Gemara says, Al-Shlo Berchu ha-Torah Tchila. They didn't recite Birchas ha-Torah. And he explains the significance of that, that they didn't appreciate the Torah was glorious and majestic, and they didn't feel any motivation to recite a bracha on it. And if you don't have that attitude coming in, then nothing is going to get through to you. Nothing is going to make an impact. It doesn't matter how fantastic it is. If you don't have a recognition of that which is special, so then the Torah is going to be lost on you. So that's what the Ramban says here. We have to see, are you people who can appreciate that which is great? That's a necessary step in the receiving of the Torah. Now, the Znaim Latorah has a few other comments on this idea. He says also, this display of all of the forces of nature is to test you to recognize that sometimes for the Torah you're going to have to go through fire, you're going to have to go through water. Are you willing to do that? And also that you should know who is giving the Torah. So the rest of the pasuk, which says that Yiras Hashem should be conveyed to you. So it seems a little bit like somewhat of a contradiction within the pasuk, right? The pasuk says in the beginning, Al Tiro, don't be afraid. Yeah, why are we doing this? So you should be afraid. Right? So that sounds a little bit of a contradiction. Don't be afraid. This is just here, so you should be afraid. So it explains that, yeah, don't be afraid this fire is going to swallow you up. That's not the point. The point is not that this is a dangerous experience right now. even though you do keep dying and coming back to life, but that's not the point. Don't be afraid in that sense. But this is here to impress upon you who is the giver of the Torah, so that when you think about sinning, you should be afraid. You should recognize that the Torah is coming from a very powerful source, and therefore, Yiras Hashem in general, that's what this is meant to engender, but it's not a scary experience per se, and you should understand that that's the real purpose of it. But they still keep their distance. Next pasuk says, V'yamar ha'amei rachok, v'moshe nigash el harafel, asher sham ha'elokim. So they stand far away, and Moshe comes near to the darkness where God is. V'yomar Hashem Moshe kosomar al b'nei Yisrael atem re'isem kimen ha'shamayim dibarti imochem. So here God says to Moshe, say this to the Jewish people, you have seen that I am talking to you from Shamayim. What's the point in emphasizing that I'm talking to you from Shamayim? Here the Oznayim Torah has a comment that the point is that you should know not to worship the mountain. You shouldn't think that the mountain is the source of the Torah. The mountain is just where the Jews came and gathered. But the Torah actually comes from Shamayim, so don't think this mountain has any extra significance. Soloveitchik understood this in the spirit of much of his philosophical writings, that this idea of Min HaShamayim, the idea of the Halacha coming from Shamayim and coming down to earth, that that is our role in the application of the Halacha in this world, the Halachic man, as he wrote about, to see the vision of Halacha applied to this world. Okay, so the next pasuk continues, Lo sason iti, Elohe chesef, Elohe zav, Lo sasu lochem. So first this idea, Lo sason iti, you should not make those with me. So what does that mean? The Gemara Masechta Hashanah has a whole discussion about this. Lo sason kidmus shamshai and shamshin yifanei mo. You should not make images of my servants. So the halacha, this seems to be, it's not necessarily about Avodah Zarah, as Sfarim point out, or Yosef Engel actually has a whole discussion about this, because the Asaras HaDibros already told us that we should not be engaging in idolatry, we got that. But this is actually a reference more to a Marasayan consideration, that we shouldn't have things in our possession or create things that will give people the impression that we are pursuing idolatrous goals. So when it comes to human beings, so we find that there is an issur to create images of human beings. The way it's brought in Shulchan Aruch after some discussion, the Rishonim, the Rambam, and others, is that essentially what we're talking about is what we call bolet, meaning images that are three-dimensional, essentially. So we're not necessarily talking about a flat two-dimensional image. There is a discussion later in Svarim about whether there should be any concern about being photographed. Svarim point out, or Cook, or the Rugachev, and others, that nowadays the minute clearly is to be very accepting of being photographed. But even though there was what to talk about in the spirit of this whole issue, Chaim Zonnefeld to choose about this also, that's clearly our minute today, that we're not hesitant to be photographed. But in terms of sculpture, so then that creates an issue, because to have a three-dimensional representation of bullet means to stick out, that's a problem, again, as opposed to a two-dimensional image or something which is shakua. Sometimes something is actually inverted. If you impress an image onto a garment, for example, so then it's going to be sunken rather than out. So it's the opposite direction. But if it's a bolate, that's where we find the general attitude, lahachmir. But the Shach also notes that he thinks as well, not only does it have to be three-dimensional, but it also has to be the entire body. So there are those, who was the whole discussion in Poskim, but there are those who were makel by busts. If you have just the shoulders and the head of a person, that even though that's three-dimensional, but it doesn't represent the whole body, so that's a different story. It's a big discussion.
Why would be a difference between
I guess the question is, what do you perceive as something that could look like an actual idol that you're worshipping? So if it's just a part of the body, so then it's just a representation, clearly. If it's the whole body, then you could say, okay, this is an idol, this is what I worship. it's a discussion. There are those who are more machmer on this issue, those more make on this issue. It's also a more complicated question when it comes to, as the Gemara discusses in Rosh Hashanah, Shamshai, Shamshim Lefanei B'marom, the sun and the stars and the moon, that becomes a problem even on a two-dimensional level. And you're all aware that when you walk through the mural, all the different forms that mural took because of that child. So now it looks like something else. Good question.
Unclear what it is.
Right, well, again, it's subject to interpretation what it is now. But before that, it used to be more astral bodies or the planets and the sun and things like that. So objection was raised because of Pasuk, Lasasanitim, remember I was walking past there with my son, who mentions against the Mishnayos and Rosh Hashanah, and is correct. So that's why they eventually altered it, and that's an interesting part of our history here. Okay, so next Pasuk talks about the Mizbeach.
Would it be, let's say, like kids have in their room sometimes, like,
yeah, it's an
stars
interesting
and moons.
Right, that's an interesting discussion. That's called an orrery. Yeah, in English.
What's the
word? Orrery.
Okay.
O-R-R-E-R-R-Y, if I'm not mistaken. So there, it's also a discussion where something is clearly for educational purposes. The Gemara says that's different, although maybe the educational purposes are about teaching about Avodah Zarah. It's a little bit of a discussion as well. Okay, Mizbach Adama Tassali. So you have to make a mizbeach. Mizbeach should be made out of earth, and you should bring the karbanos there, and wherever my name is mentioned, so I will come in, and I will bless you. And, just to go back for a second, so the previous class, I didn't mention, Rashi continues the rest of the pasuk. This idea of El Hechesef El Ezov. So Rashi adds another dimension here, that this Bola Hazir El Akruvim, that this is coming to talk about how the Kruvim are made, Sha'ata Osa Va'amoditi, Shlo Yishol Kesef. That it should be gold, should not be silver. El Ezov, what is that about? Bola Hazir Shlo Yosef Al Shnaim, Shimasis Arbari, Lefanai Kel Ezov. You should make more of that. So here it's very interesting that we have very specific rules about the Kruvim, and they have to be exactly a certain way, gold and not silver, and not more. And there is a whole discussion about this with Yaakov Kamenetsky, and his Sefer Emes Yaakov has a whole discussion about this is very hard to understand. It's also the case that Gemara says in Bava Basra and Daf Tzadi Tes that the Kruvim, Einom and Aminyan, they didn't actually take up any space. This is very difficult to understand also, because that's clearly a miracle. But God doesn't do miracles without a need. There has to be some tzorech for this miracle. So what was the reason this miracle had to happen? Especially because it's such an unusual miracle. It's not even something that people can relate to. So you're right, it's one thing if you say, okay, we should have stam miraculous things in the Beis HaMikdash so that people who would show up there, they would get Yirat Shamayim from seeing them. But here, people wouldn't even understand what's happening once they took out a ruler and figured out it wasn't taking up any space and they're able to match it up. So this isn't very difficult, this whole concept. He thinks it's there to emphasize the idea that this is all Gzer Sarkasa, that this is all God's very specific decree about how this is meant to be done, and therefore we have to stick to the details. We're not allowed to change it at all. Okay? So the next pasuk goes on. We read the pasuk of Aleph to continue now. The pasuk of Beis, V'mizbach avonim tasa li'losiv nesem gozes, yichar v'cha peinafta le'a v'atechal le'a. So when you're going to make this, if you're going to make a mizbeach of stone, you can't use cut stone because you're going to have to use weaponry, essentially. You have to use iron to cut it. It's the same thing we use for weapons, and that will be mechalal it. That's going to take it away from its status. And the Sefer Achinuch in Mitzvah Mem talks about this, about how the Beis HaMikdash is a place of shalom, and it's a makom of shalom, so we have to recognize that what we think about and what we focus on has an effect on our personality, and therefore to use a tool for war on the Mizbeach is something that's going to be harmful to the whole mentality that we bring. Now, it's also
interesting because a lot of people's impression of this Mizbeach is just like a slaughterhouse.
I know, I thought about that. I wonder if, how the slaughter of the animals, why that doesn't, right, so it's very interesting. I thought about that. I was looking to see if anybody talked about that, why that seems to be on a completely different track. So we know that there is this din that we can't use iron in terms of construction, but it does seem like there are violent images or potentially violent images that are otherwise associated, and interesting to be interested to find a good approach to what differentiates that. Why is that not? I mean, clearly, there's a difference between war and shechita. It seems to be war specifically is what we're trying to avoid. But you would still think, okay, the slaughter of animals also doesn't seem to fit so well. I would be interested if you come across anybody who addresses this directly. Would like to see it. So in any event, this language, v'im mizbach avanim. What does that mean, if? So it's up to you. You could choose to do it or not. So, no, that's not the case. So you see here, Rashi quotes Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Kol im v'im shebetor rishus, chutz migimel. That normally it's a language of rishus, that this is something that you could choose to do, but here and two other places it is a obligation. The language really should be read kasher, that when you do it, these are the rules that go along with it. And Rashi tells you the other two places, that if you shall lend money, you shouldn't take that to be purely speculative, oh, maybe someday you'll want to do that, but rather that's a chiyuv to lend money. So it's just the language we use when saying what goes along with it. And also, that we find it also in the context of bikurim. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a discussion about this in his paper, in the Darash Moshe, where he writes that, okay, I accept the fact that it says, it uses this language of him, but it really means you will, but why does it do that? Why do we have this change that sometimes we use a different word which would otherwise suggest a voluntary rather than an obligation? So he suggests that he thinks all of this, it's important that we should feel like this is something that we want to do. That in general, I've mentioned this medrash many times in other contexts, there is a medrash which Rambam talks about, and others talk about, which states that there's no inyan to say, for example, I have no interest in eating non-kosher food. It's fine for you to acknowledge that you're very interested in eating tray food, that the little White Castle hamburgers are very intriguing, but nonetheless, you're not going to do it because of Gzeiras HaMelech. So the Rambam in Shmona Prakim discusses when it applies, when it doesn't apply. Here, Moshe says that the point is we have to feel sometimes like this is something we do connect to. It's okay in general with the whole Torah to say, okay, I'm observing the Torah because God said so. But there's a few points that we highlight that we want you to feel that you're doing this because you want to do it, even though it's also a mitzvah. So lending money, okay, you should feel like you want to help, even though it's a commandment, but you should connect to the desire to help people. And Bikurim, the recognition that everything that you have because of God, and therefore you want to acknowledge that with the first fruits, that's something you need to connect to emotionally. And so too here, this mizbeah, this foundation of the expression of God's presence. So this is something we should want to be a part of, and therefore the language is like this. So Rav Moshe also suggests the same comment, that we're talking to the entire Jewish people at once, and therefore we also want to refer to the notion of lufnim mishuras hadin, the idea that sometimes we're going to go above and beyond, and therefore we want to include that in our instruction to the entire Jewish people, that there's the you wills and the if you wills, and all of that is a part of this instruction and a part of what we're conveying, so therefore that comes across. So here this last pasuk is a very famous comment that many people will appreciate, that the pasuk Aliyah, the parsha ends, Lo sala b'malos al mizbechi, asher lo segaleh ervos olav, that you should not have steps. You have to have a ramp. You shouldn't go up on steps. So you should not reveal your erva. So what does that mean? Because it sounds like if you're going to walk up a staircase, you have to lift up your feet, and the stairs are going to be looking at that. So it looks like it's going to be exposed. So that's what Rashi writes here. Shalideh hamalos ata tzarich laharchet tzitzafa. And because the steps, you have to walk at a certain pace. You're going to have to spread out your legs, v'yafal pi she'enu guli erva mamish, even though you're not actually exposing the erva, sharei tziv aseh lehem b'shma sevod, because they're wearing pants there, so it's not actually exposed. Mikol makom harchavas apsios karov guli erva, but nonetheless, it is still close to being exposed. V'yaten noyeg ba minig b'zayim. You are treating them disrespectfully. And here is the key line. One of the members of my shul very much likes pointing this out. He thinks this is a very core concept. It says, "V'harei dvarim kal v'chomer," says Rashi. So here, don't we know a kal v'chomer? Uma avanim halalu she'im behem das lahakpid al b'zionon. That here, rocks, they don't know what's going on. They're not going to care that you are treating them disrespectfully. Amra Torah, horo li'esh behem sorak, lo sinig behem many b'zionon. The Torah says, nonetheless, they are significant, they have a purpose, so don't treat them disrespectfully. Chavercha shehu b'dmus yotzercha. So your friend, who is in the image of the Creator, makbid al b'zionon, he does care how he's treated. Alachas kama v'chama, all the more so, certainly you have to be very careful in how you treat them. So this is the yesod that we have in general. We know that we cover the challahs Friday nights because we don't want them to be disrespected when we choose the wine over them.
Where is this one?
Sorry?
Where is this one?
Where is that found? That's
the, this. The
Rax is Rashi. Rashi is here close to the same way. But we're comparing it to other ideas that we find in halacha, that we care about how we treat even inanimate objects, like we cover up the challahs, because we recognize that when you think about how to treat people, it takes practice. It's not something that can always come automatically. And you have to train yourself in certain sensitivities and certain appreciation for how people might react. So we practice on inanimate objects, and the Gemara of Kama says we have to have appreciation for how inanimate objects benefit us. It's also a theme in Hakara Satov. So all of this comes together to help us treat people in a proper fashion. It's a very important yisod, a very important principle. It's also pointed out to Sefer Achinuch and others, there's another theme here, that it's simply the theme of the idea of not walking quickly. Psios gasos, you can run up the stairs, you have to run up the stairs a little bit because they're a certain length. So that notion is also, as Schwab has a whole essay about this in the Sefer as well, but you see this already in the Sefer Achinuch, that rather when you walk up a ramp, you put one foot in front of the other, that you have to be serious in how you do things. You can't just be careless. You can't just have kalos rosh. There is a certain path, and that's also a part of the mentality here. And the Sefer Achinuch, when talking about this mitzvah, he ends off, he says, v'anovim yirshu aretz. So Nechasinuch says, he just put that there in order to end on a positive note. That's a little hard to understand, because then why doesn't he put that everywhere? So some Svarim point out, in Sefer Bechia, as a contemporary Sefer, he points out, if you look at the Gliyakar, Kliyakar understands that this is about nivus. The whole theme is about modesty, that you shouldn't run up, but you should treat it with respect and with kovod rosh and with seriousness. And that also goes together with this idea of giving that in front of you, that which is in front of you, its proper due. So all of that is necessary to create the proper mentality as we approach the Mizbeach. So it's a fitting end for a parsha that's very intense in its content and gives us the whole essence of the Torah. So to recognize all of this closing Ali, all of this message about both the instinctive reverence that the Jews had and how that had to be addressed, and then the Ali ending off with other themes of reverence towards holiness and the recognition how that affects the rest of our life, some very crucial ideas. Okay, so I guess we will stop here. Jacob, you're standing up. Looks like you want to daven for us. Okay, looks like you're going to daven for us. Yes,